Welcome all you Warrington Wolves fans. It's time for your weekly fix of Warrington chitter chatter and intellectual discussion. Yes, it's time for the boys to bring you up to date news. Chittistics and bollocks. It's time for what would Vera Lynn say? No. What would the Dalai Lama say? No. What would Brian Bevan say? Yes. That's it. What would Brian Bevan say? Strap in you norms. It's all downhill from here. It might get tasty. Daniel is here.
Coming up in today's podcast, there's youth on our side with blogger Daniel guesting on the show. Sam takes a look at why a coach is separating the elite from the chavs. Is it time to face the truth as we roll out the Burrell again? We have a Twitter vote to determine would you be happy with a wire our COVID year. Not forgetting Instagram profiling and your lockdown letters. And can Madam Boyd make contact with her indigenous soul? This is What Would Brian Bevan Say? Hello, I'm Rob London, and with young Daniel joining the podcast today, my youth came flooding back. Yes, to a time where I didn't have to worry about sitting on one of my balls every time I sat down. So talking of bollocks, where are my two podcasting gonads? First up, a man's youth that was that long ago. As a boy, he'd get out of a shoebox at 12 o'clock at night and lick the road clean with his tongue. He'd eat a handful of freezing cold gravel for his breakfast, work 28 hours a day down the mill for fourpence every 6 years. And when he got home, his mum would slice him in two with a bread knife. And he was the lucky one. It's Sam Monty Python Sankey.
Bread knife, if only. She disemboweled me with a blunt spoon so that I'd feel it.
Do you like spooning, Sam?
You have to do least effort, I suppose, yes.
Secondly, a prehistoric fossil that was probably around to see the Big Bang and certainly hasn't had the energy to bang anything for years. And as the universe expands, his waistline does too, until one day, like the galaxy, he'll no doubt implode up his own black hole. It's Dennis Stephen Hawking Waywell.
All right. I think this is all a bit pointless, I'll be honest, because I read the other day that the Mayan calendar was out by 11 days and factored in since it was put together and when the end of the world is. That happens to be June 21st, which is tomorrow.
And as I mentioned at the start, a young man who wasn't born in time for Tiswas, Lady Di or Charles's wedding, watch the SAS storm the Iranian embassy or see Des Drummond flatten Martin Afire off the ball in front of the Fletcher Street end. Welcoming our first blogger to the podcast from You've Got a Loose Wire, it's Daniel.
Thank you. I think I got off lightly there compared to the other two intros.
How are you going, mate? How's it all coping in lockdown?
Yeah, all good. Obviously missing the sport, but just getting through each day as it goes. Enjoyed listening to the podcast recently, so pleased to be on for this one.
Oh, very good. Are we your number one podcast, Daniel? Are we the one you go to every time?
Yeah, you're the only podcast I listen to.
Yeah, yeah.
How much did you pay him to say that?
Oh dear.
Jack O'Norry, Jack O'Norry. Jack O'Norry.
Yes, time to sit back and relax as we read you the stories of the week. We'll start, Sam, with Ben Curry. He's been linked to a move to the Leeds Rhinos. What are we thinking of this? He's on the merry-go-round at the moment, is Mr. Curry.
Well, I've just bought a new frame for my picture of Ben to go in because I'm just getting ready to put it back up on the wall for another couple of years. Noise going around is that Leeds aren't really serious.
And why is that? Where's that news coming from?
You.
Where was it? Oh, that's right. Yeah, yesterday. Sorry about that. Yeah, yeah, it is. Daniel, you're not far from Headingley at all, mate. And you've got your Ben Curry top on today, I see. Would you be keen for Mr. Curry to leave and head to the Rhinos?
Absolutely not. Although he is my favourite player, even though it would mean he'd be a bit closer to me geographically. I still would really like Warrington to keep him. I think, obviously, last year he came back from his couple of injuries, had a couple of iffy games, but I actually think this year, I mean, it seems a long time ago since we played, but I actually think he was playing really, really well up until the shutdown. Some great defensive showings, brilliant pass for Toby King, and then Lynham for the try against Castleford. So I definitely think Warrington should be doing everything they can to keep him, because I think he's coming back to his best.
So would you keep him on the same money, Daniel?
Well, I'm not really sure how viable that is with Austin Widdop and Inglis on board now, but I'd certainly be looking to keep him on reasonable money and find a compromise somewhere.
Yeah.
Because I think he's a useful player to have.
Just a minute on that. He's asking you these questions, Daniel, for the simple reason that he thinks because you're in Leeds, you're going to hear something from Headingley. That's a quality of his questioning. What I'm interested in is where you shop, because you sounded quite keen in midweek that you were going to bump into him in Tesco's. So,
Well, there's Tesco's, Sainsbury's, Morrison's. We don't have an Asda near me, but
he's not an Asda shopper. He's in Waitrose, isn't he? Yeah, he's in Waitrose. Well, he was in Waitrose. Now I think he's more in Tesco's. He's high end Tesco's, but I'm not quite sure he's Waitrose anymore. One player that certainly is Lidl, and that's Bryson Goodwin. He's surplus to requirements at the Bunnies, and he's headed to the Sharks. Sam, should we have kept him?
Personally, no. I like Bryson Goodwin. Like him a lot, but he was slowing up, wasn't he? He wasn't. Every time he made a bit of a half break, he was caught within 20 metres by a prop forward jogging backwards. So his speed had gone. Great ability. I'd like to have seen him here 2 or 3 years sooner, but time had moved on. And I can't see him doing anything at the Sharks other than just filling in for injuries.
It's quite nice, that ground down there in Cronulla. It's a nice place to be. Nice golf course across the road. Nice bit of surf going on as well. It's a nice place to be living. Daniel, you're a fan of Bryson Goodwin, or are you sort of in line with what Sam's just said?
To be honest, I really liked Goodwin. I thought he had two good years with us. Regular try scorer. He had a good step on him. I know he lost a little bit of his pace, but he was 34 by the time he left, I think. So I think that's to be expected. And put it this way, I don't think we upgraded by getting Gelling. So I would certainly have been keen to keep him, particularly as he's gone somewhere where he's not played and has left before he's even played his first match back. So I would have made an effort to keep him at least.
You think we could have perhaps kept him one more year and then the upgrade comes next year, doesn't it?
Well, that would have been a serious upgrade, yeah. But I liked Goodwin. And if you think he scored a lot of tries in big games, he got the 5 against Hull in 2018, the one again in the Challenge Cup semi-final last year. I also thought he was quite good defensively. That brilliant try on, brilliant tackle, sorry, on Makinson in the Challenge Cup final when Makinson was certain to score.
Yeah, so
absolutely. I actually thought he was a really, really good player for us. And I agree that if he'd come maybe 2 or 3 years earlier, that would have been even better. But, you know, the 2 years of service he gave to us were certainly good.
Ryan Hall, he might possibly be coming home because he can't get an opportunity for love nor money at the Roosters. Played in the team the other week, did very well, didn't score a try in a big win for the Roosters. Would we like to see him at the wire, Daniel? Would you swap him for either Lynham or Charnley?
Probably not. I imagine that he'd be on a bit more money than those two. So I'm not sure how feasible that would be financially. I also think, is he 32, 33 now? So he's coming towards...
Yeah, 32.
It wouldn't be a long-term signing. I think in his heyday, he was one of the best wingers in the world at Leeds. But I'm not really sure that winger is an area we need to be looking at too much at the minute.
No, it's like he went to the NRL just slightly too late, didn't he? He was sort of 3 years too late to the NRL.
Yeah.
He played very well the other week, but he just can't get in that Roosters team. It's just too strong.
He's a similar player, though, isn't he, to Charnley and Lynham? He's good at the defensive bit and bringing the ball up, but he's not like an out-and-out strike winger. He's going to go round somewhere.
No, I think Daniel makes a good point. He's going to be on a lot of money at the Roosters, and it'd be intriguing to see where he ends up back in English Super League, unless he retires, because I'm not sure he'll go back to Leeds. Just have to wait and see. One player who is going the other way is Jackson Hastings, by the look of it. He's heading to the New Zealand Warriors. Sam, it doesn't sound like he's fitted in at Wigan. Or I mean, he's been okay on the field, but off the field, I think there's a few little problems there. He's not fitting in with the rest of the team.
Well, we've seen this with him everywhere he's been, haven't we? That he seems to go and really enjoy a good year and then fade in and out of places and moves on after a couple of years. Maybe it's just him. Maybe he's got itchy feet all the time. And to be fair, at the minute, if you're in Super League and you're playing well and an NRL team comes knocking, you're almost always going to go, aren't you?
May change, actually, I think, because Kearney lost his job today, didn't he? So,
yes.
Yeah. Intriguing to see what happens to Hastings. We probably dodged a bullet there, Dennis. I mean, at one point, he possibly was coming to the wire. He's not arrived. Now we've got Widdop on that two-year contract. We could have been up jack shit without a paddle, really, couldn't we, if Hastings had been with us?
Yeah, I suppose so. But we're a bit blessed in that department because you can see the picture behind me. We've got Deck Patton, we've got Widdop, Austin, and we've got Inglis. So we're pretty blessed in that department, aren't we, really?
Yes,
do you think, Daniel, Deck Patton could get in the side at any point in the rest of the year?
In what side? You know, the reserve side or...?
Oh, that's harsh. That's harsh, Daniel. Oh, dear.
Yeah, we're just trying to provoke you a little bit.
Did you not read in the Deck Patton warning before he came on, Dennis? No, didn't mention that to him. Oh, dear. 34 years of age, James Graham. It looks like he's going to be released from his contract. He's trying to get home and play one final season at St Helens. We've talked about the mongrel and, you know, not having that in our pack. Probably can't afford him, but Saints are certainly going to get a player with a little bit of resilience. I don't know about what his legs are like anymore. Daniel, are you a fan of James Graham?
In his heyday for Saints, certainly. And he's been a great player for England and Great Britain. But I'm not sure. I mean, it's a short-term solution rather than a long-term one, isn't it? I mean, like you say, he's 34. So I don't think it's something that we should have been looking at. We need to be looking at the next kind of big prop, kind of 25, 26 age, I would say, like when we signed Hill. Who's going to be our prop for the next 5-6 years? Graham, great player. But he's only been at Saints for, what, 6 months or whatever? Maybe a year at most.
You're right there. You also wonder what sort of state James Graham's body's going to be in when he retires.
Yeah.
Bloody hell, he's been a warhorse, hasn't he? And even when he was a Saints player, I still had admiration for him. And watching him in the NRL, he gives his all every single minute he's on the pitch. But 34, he'll come over, perhaps finish the season with Saints, and he's going to be knackered then.
Well, this is his last year. He's going to go into TV, I think, back over here in Australia once the season finishes.
Really?
Yeah, that's the plan. He's coming back to Australia to take up a role in the media. Not a bad replacement, though, when there's no one kicking about. You know, you've just lost Thompson.
Oh, yeah.
He'll do a job for them between now and the end of the year.
Oh, God, yeah, without a doubt. I don't think there's any doubt on that. We're not far be it to decry James Graham. He's been playing. He's fully fit. When everyone else is just coming back into contact training in another month, he'll be all good for a couple of weeks of rest and raring to go, won't he?
Definitely. Now, during this pandemic, it's been interesting to see how the world's leaders have been coping. Boris decided to continue to shake people's hands, which didn't end well. Donald hid in the basement and turned off all the lights. And Putin has built himself a disinfection chamber everyone must pass through prior to meeting the president. And the New Zealand Prime Minister, well, she simply put any ego to one side, listened to the scientists and abruptly put in place tight quarantine, social distancing, bought PPE equipment in abundance and spoke to her nation in an articulate and confident manner, thus saving thousands of lives and eradicating COVID from the country. So in a time like this, the podcast thought best we turn to our leader, Madam Boyd. Dennis put in his call to the podcast queen to see what miracle she could come up with.
Well, I find myself down at Glastonbury Abbey today. These are the special lockdown measures and process that I have to go through to get hold of Madam Boyd. So, anyway, 7th century, this. It has a custom for sending a budding hawthorn to the Queen at Christmas. But, I don't really know about any of that shit. Right, anyway, here's a crypt. I'll just lock myself in. Right, I believe she's got David Icke still there. Let's just do this.
Emergency, which service?
Madam Boyd's Chip Shop, codenamed Battered Sausage. No idea why I'm having to do this. She's opening a bloody chip shop on Tuesday anyway. Could have just gone round there. Here we go.
We're sorry. You have reached a number that has been disconnected or is no longer in service. If you feel you have reached this recording in error, please check the number and try your call again.
Hello, this is Uber on the control tower. Do you want number 77?
Madam Boy speaking on Her Majesty's Essential Service.
Madam Boy, it's Dennis Waywell.
Oh, Dennis, you've come through on the hotline.
Yeah, he did say I could call if we were desperate for me, you know, something to talk about.
What is it this time? Is Rob London threatening to do another sing-along?
Yep, that, and Sam's threatening to do an hour of shitistic, so, yeah, we need something.
Well, I'm afraid, though, prediction is out of the question.
You're kidding. Why?
I'm afraid David's had a little accident with my balls.
Accident?
Yes, it seems he was using my balls to test one of his conspiracy theories. Little did I know that meant sticking them up his ass. Mm. That's where most of his conspiracy theories are from.
Oh, bloody hell. Well, is there any chance you could put us in contact with someone?
Well, I suppose I could find you a telephone number by pressing my magic beam.
How does that work?
Well, I'll press the beam and the number will stream.
Oh, all right.
Who would you like, dear?
I'll probably want somebody who can interview, really, because Rob London's really good at that. Tell you what, Greg Inglis.
Not a problem, dear. Leave it with me.
Can I not have it now?
No, dear. I must preen my bean before I scream.
Oh, right, okay. Well, listen, anything before next weekend. Be in a right mess otherwise.
Don't worry, dear. Now, where's my brass at?
So, Dennis, has the number come through, mate? Is there any chance of getting Greg Inglis on the What Would Brian Bevan Say podcast?
Well, I'm in total. I believe her. She's mostly accurate. What are you on about? So,
hang on. Let's just stop here for a second, right? He's refused to do any interviews for the British media. Why on earth would he pick What Would Brian Bevan Say?
Well, I think she's got special connections. She can, it's a summer solstice, a very special time at Glastonbury.
You've been drinking?
You know, last night I have, yeah. God, I feel awful today.
Now, how times have changed in the way we communicate. I remember writing and posting a letter to a girl from Essex that I once groped on a crazy golf course whilst holidaying with my parents on the Bulgarian Riviera. Dennis would have to ring his dealer from a phone box, and Sam would be busy in his box bedroom, vigorously banging away on his VIC-20, hoping for it to beat back at him. But there's no luddits on What Would Brian Bevan Say, as it's time to talk blogging with Blogster Daniel. I think Blogster's the collective noun for blogging. Anyway, here to explain. Daniel, mate, tell us all about You've Got a Loose Wire.
Yeah, so I started the blog at the start of 2019. So I think we in the podcast...
Excuse me. What's the blog?
Oh, okay. I would describe a blog as a series of posts online about a particular topic.
Write this down, Dennis. Write this down.
I'm writing it.
So mine, You've Got a Loose Wire, is all about Warrington. And I started it at the start of 2019. So I think I started the blog around about a similar time that you guys started this podcast. And I write before and after matches. So before matches, I write the team talk, where I write what my preferred lineup would be for the game. And then after the match, I write a set of six articles, so picking out six particular talking points from the game, and do player ratings as well, rating each player out of 10 on their performances. I've done other things. I did a really long piece on Carl Fitzpatrick's time as CEO, assessing him in different categories, success or failure. I did Warrington's Team of the Decade for 2010 to 19. That's possibly my favourite piece so far. And recently we've had the 25th anniversary of Super League, so I did a series on that, Warrington's top 10 Super League matches, top 10 Super League players, and top 10 Super League seasons. So it's just it's just something that I like to do in my spare time, to write about the club and the team and different things and get people involved. I have the Twitter account as well, where obviously people interact and read my posts. So Yeah, it's going strong. A year and a half into it now, and still enjoying it. Although I've not written anything for a while, so there's not been too much rugby on. But still enjoying doing it.
Tell us about it, Daniel. We know all about that. I have to put up with these two dickheads every week with nothing to talk about. Exactly what it's like. Now, where does the passion come from, Daniel? I mean, after you know we've had a loss. How long do you give it before you sort of, you know, go to the keyboard? Do you go straight in and go for it, or do you sort of have time to breathe and think about it and reflect and do it the next day?
If it's a game that I've gone to, obviously I have to wait until I get home. But if it's a game that I've just watched on the television, then I'll probably start writing 10 minutes after full time, because I feel that A, I remember things better just so quickly after it's happened, and B, there is a bit more passion, a bit more raw emotion in there, particularly after, as you say, a loss. I mean, the Leeds game, as you say, I'm not far from Headingley, so that only got me 10 minutes to get home, and then I started writing. Obviously, it was 36-38 or something, so I wrote that one really, really quickly and had plenty to say, hammering away at the keyboard in anger. But I try to upload them within 24 hours of the match finishing at absolute latest, because if I don't do it as soon as the game's finished, I'll do it either the next day or when I get home from the match. So.
And what feedback do you get, mate? I mean, I know you're very passionate in what you write. Is it?
Yeah.
How do people cope with that?
There's positives and negatives. Obviously, people are allowed to have an opinions. That's fine. You know, it's a game of opinions, and not everyone will agree with the things that I say. But I always try to back my points up. So if I make a point, I'll always try and give a reason or a justification for why I've said it. Might pick out a particular example from the match if I say a player's had a poor game or a particularly good game. So yeah, there's some people who criticise me, and that's fine. Don't have a problem with that. I think people sometimes say I'm a little bit too negative, perhaps. Again, maybe. But you know, I always try and call it how I see it, which is if I think something's really good, I'll say. If I think a performance is not good at all, then I'll say that. I'll always be as honest as I can be in my appraisal.
Do you think living in Yorkshire, that gives you a more negative outlook than if you were obviously over the right side of the Pennines in Leeds and Cheshire?
Potentially, yeah. Potentially that gives me a negative opinion on life. But to be fair, though, it's useful with the away games, because Castleford, Wakefield, Hull, Huddersfield, Leeds, they're all pretty local for me, so I'm able to get to away games and home within the hour a lot of the time. But maybe there's a point there.
So which piece has created the most reaction that you've done over the past 18 months?
Maybe my team of the decade, you know. Maybe the team of the decade from 2010 to 19. That got a lot of response. A lot of people criticised me, including Chris Sandow in there. But I think, you know, fair criticism, because he wasn't here too long. So that's got
Rob's,
a bit of criticism.
Rob's his agent, you know, Sandow's agent.
I'll give him a call.
Yeah, well, you know, if you want to tell him that it was in my team of the decade, that's absolutely fine.
I'll let him know.
Oh, so it's people disagreeing with it, was it?
Oh, yeah, yeah. People seem to have an issue with that, which, again, you know, there's a fair case, and maybe it shouldn't have been because he wasn't here that long, but I felt it was the best player in that position that we'd had over the last 10 years. So that created a lot of discussion. I did a team of the season, Super League team of the season 2019, and I think I only included the one Warrington player, which was Darrell Clark, and a lot of the Warrington fans weren't too impressed with that. But again, I called it how I saw it, which was that I only thought Clark was the only one who had a case to be in there. And the same for I did a countdown of top 60 Super League players of 2019, and again, not many of the Warrington players ranked so highly. I think Clark, Austin were in the top 10, but that was it. So again, that got a bit of criticism, but that's fine. I try to be completely unbiased in what I say and how I see the game.
Log on,
which is
Daniel.
Good.
Log on.
Which is good. But I suppose, where does the connection for Warrington come for you then? Because obviously you're in Leeds. You've got like this impartial view of looking at it, you know, as it is. So where does
this is your life all of a sudden, Dennis? What's going on here? You're going to ask for his inside leg measurement next, aren't you?
I'm practicing for Tony Barrow. Go on.
To be fair, I probably have more love for Warrington living away than I ever would if I did, because living among other fans of other clubs, there's the banter there and the criticism, and you know, it makes me even more determined to see Warrington do well and win things. When we won the Challenge Cup last year, that was absolutely great. But I mean, I grew up in Leeds and went to school in Leeds. In Leeds' great time of like winning the treble and grand finals, World Cup challenges, Challenge Cups, etc. So that was really difficult. So as Warrington have become a little better over the years in terms of winning a couple of Challenge Cups, a few grand finals, that certainly made it even sweeter living in a part of the world where obviously Leeds and Castleford have been pretty good over the years.
I've got a tackle bag idea for you. Actually, is that you know that you know you've appeared here on Zoom today, so we can see you. You've got a face for YouTube. We haven't got a YouTube channel from a fan blog perspective. So have you ever thought about
what you're doing, grooming him?
No, I'm just thinking of all the different things that we're missing.
You
want to take it further like that somewhere?
I did consider YouTube and kind of doing videos outside the ground at the end of matches, but it's never something I've actually tried. But it is something I've considered. But I don't know. I don't know if I've got a face for YouTube at all. I'm not sure. I'd certainly need a haircut at the minute to.
You can always wear a gimp mask like Rob. I mean, you know that hides.
Sam, what's the difference between blogging and vogging? do you know who the top blogger is in the world, Daniel? Any idea? The Huffington Post. 41.6 million per month it generates.
I don't get anywhere near that.
Not going to get anywhere. Okay. Sam, we've looked at the wingers' stats and the props' figures, but time now to take a butcher's at the coaches with...
Statistics, caveats, bollocks. Listen up, you norms, it's time for Sam to talk shite. For 5 minutes. It's Sam Sankey's statistics.
Sam, which wire coaches have a boastful statistics and which ones have the inexcusable shitistics?
Well, very interesting this, that for someone who likes percentages like me. Yeah. So you might fall asleep.
Only time it has been interesting.
You might fall asleep in this. I thought we'd look at coaches more recently, but first of all, just a bit of an overview. Warrington as a club have had 20 coaches since World War II.
You know, we'll get letters on that. There'll be one you've forgotten.
They might be. But Chris Brockbank, 1936 to 1951, was the coach who first had Brian Bevan and is also the coach with the biggest win percentage in Warrington's post-war history, with 74% win percentage. If we come a bit more up to date and we think about those coaches that we can remember, sorry, Daniel, not you, mate. We sort of start from the mid-80s. If we start with Tony Barrow, 62% win rate. His team included people like Cullen.
I like Tony Barrow.
Yeah, I know you do. Andy Gregg, Boyd, Tamati Sanderson, Mike Gregg, Brian Johnson. Then Brian Johnson himself took over, won a couple of trophies, but only a 54% win rate. John Donahue, God, he was dull, 50%. And then it started to go, started to go a bit downhill then. Daryl van der Velde, we obviously know of.
So can we talk about blogging again?
Well, I think the thing we've got to think about, we had those years, van der Velde 42, Anderson 29%. Oof. Although he's our friend now, isn't he? He was left in the shit a bit by the previous regime, by the looks of it. Plange did even worse, 25%. Before Paul Cullen, the saviour of the club, got going with a HJ move, he got star players, Martin Gleeson, Matt King, Logan Swan, Morley and Andrew Johns, but only won 49% of his games and half of his games, which perhaps is the reason why he went and Tony Smith came in. The man who built on what was already there, took control, signed a few extra players, 72%, the second best win percentage in the club's history. So how does Steve Price compare to that? 60%, respectable, but perhaps not where it should be. Steve's 77 matches, won 46, drawn 1, lost 30, 60%. He has gone to 3 finals out of 4, but perhaps not quite doing it week on week. What do you think of Steve?
Can you eat glass? Dennis, who's been your favourite coach, mate?
Well, I looked at these stats that Sam sent through, and I thought, how can I measure this? How would you know if it was a good percentage or not, and so on? So I thought, I'll look at the top NRL ones. And I was looking under that.
See? Interesting.
So, interesting enough, number 10 is Tim Sheens. 669 games he's done. There you go.
Done it.
That's Australian. 340 wins, which was a 50% strike rate, which, you know, for 600.
God, I hope bloody Super League comes back. So carry on.
69.
He's Paul Cullen, isn't he?
Do you know? Yeah. But I suppose the interesting ones are like Craig Bellamy, aren't they, and things he's currently coaching. He's at 68%.
No. So who's the highest?
Bellamy.
It's 68%, but in a competition which is a lot more competitive than Super League. I mean, I could have coached Wigan in the 80s and come out with a 95% success record. I mean, that's just the way things were.
Actually, if it's more competitive, then you've more chance of having a lower percentage.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Yes. Yeah. If you listen to me, Dennis, if you actually fucking wake up and listen, that's exactly what I'm saying.
Oh, okay. So you're agreeing with me.
Daniel, how many coaches have you watched during your time?
So the back end of Cullen, Smith, and then Price, and of those three, I'd have to say that Smith was by far my favourite. Not only for the win ratio, which is obviously very high, but the brand of rugby as well. Because I think it's okay winning, but you also want to be entertained. And Price has quite a good record, as you say, 60%. That's not bad at all. But how many of those 60% of wins have been won unconvincingly or not excitingly?
Yeah, you're right there, Daniel. The first 6 years or so of Smith, we played some glorious rugby, didn't we?
Yeah.
What about Tony Barrow? I mean, he's a similar percentage as Steve Price, 62%. He did 109 games, so Steve Price is season behind.
Let's not forget, Tony Barrow coached the A-team for many, many years and had a brilliant success rate. So he was a belting coach. I think you've got it all wrong, though, lads. I'd say the best coach probably to come out of Warrington and taking Wire fans on a journey to remember was Barry Cooper. If anyone remembers the Barry Cooper coaches, I've been on the website singledeckers.com. Not to be confused if you've got fat fingers with singledickers.com, which I did. I've since cleared my cash and my history. There's quite a few Barry Cooper's coaches on singledeckers.com. I'll give you the top three. In third place, with registration VED598J, was the Bedford Val 70 Plaxton Panorama Elite. It was new to the fleet of Warrington Barry Cooper in 1971. It took Wire fans to Wembley in 1974, along with daily trips for pensioners to Southport Flower Show in the summer.
I think we might have ended up going to school on one of them.
It sounds a little bit too early for us. You could also book it for work parties to watch Arthur Askey at the Liverpool Empire. It's got 97 likes on singledeckers.com. In second place,
why is Daniel leaving? Daniel, come back.
Second place. Now, Sam, would this be an O or a zero? Its registration is ODJ52R. Would that be a zero or an O?
Oh, it's an O. That's an O.
It's
that.
An O, is
our
it?
Our registration, okay. Yeah.
Comes in second place with 181 likes. It's a Heath Leyland. It was built in 1976. It took Warrington fans to Wembley in the 1977 Cup Final. When not being used for rugby league trips, it toured Scotland, taking in Loch Ness and Edinburgh Tattoo before returning home with ham sandwiches and hot coffee served in a lay-by on the M6 just north of Carlisle. But the winner, by far, and by far the best coach in Warrington with 271 likes, is SGF484L. It was built by Samuelsons in 1975. It was seen to be too prestigious to shuttle the Norms and Plebs back and to Wembley, specialising in day trips to Blackpool, and due to its tinted windows, gave an experience of a lifetime when viewing the Blackpool lights. It was also the coach chosen to toot its horn when Red Rum opened the bookmakers in Stockton Heath in 1979. So,
That's... I'll just add the 0.2% listener rate for all the bus spotters that we've now got on this podcast.
just repeat that one. It's singledickers.com. Deckers.
Yeah.
Okay, we've received a torrent of complaints about Sam's pinup boy, Ben Curry, being referred to as a humble Wigan pie curry. Therefore, to keep away from this spicy topic, today we're changing the Curry of the Week section to roll out the burrell. Now, you may not know, but the word burrell probably derives from the Old English name for the occupation of someone who sold coarse wooden cloth. So, Sam, talking of cloth, is Mr. Burrell wearing the Emperor's new clothes? With the moral of the story, of course, being... we cannot let pride keep us from speaking the truth.
I'm going to defend Luther here. I don't think we've seen anywhere near enough of him to...
I don't know. He's been waggling his cup round all week in them shorts.
Well, I was about to then go on and say, he is all over Instagram at the moment, isn't he? He looks super sculptured fit and talking about his lifestyle and his diet.
What about his rugby league, Sam?
Well, will it reflect on the pitch? Listen, I'm not. I'm
you
not
said Easter.
Ask this.
You said Easter 2020. What month?
I know, but he's only. Yeah, but he's not played, has he? I'm not having it.
He wouldn't have been playing anyway.
The guy won 15 England rugby union caps. He's a good rugby player. Whether it's too late for him to be a good rugby league player, is
so you're still sitting on the fence during I'm COVID. Sitting, you're still on the fence.
I'll give him five games, not Dennis's favourite 10. I'll give him five games from when we come back.
Right. Come on. Right. Bad enough of this spineless stuff. Let's go to someone with a backbone. Daniel, come on. Tell us about Luther Burrell.
Well, I have to say, I've not been so impressed with him so far. I just don't see where we're going with it. I can't envisage him being an important part of the team long term going forward. I feel sorry for him because I think he's clearly trying and he clearly gets frustrated with some of the criticism, which is understandable. But I don't know. I just can't envisage him being a key part of a title winning side. I just don't see it.
Come on, Dennis, roll out the burrell. What are you giving us?
I forgot what I was going to say about him now. I think that's the trouble, isn't it? You do forget that he's there. I was going to say, I'd just like to compare, you know, and we've got Inglis, is a similar size and shape, although I think, he could be a slightly a bit bigger. But if you look
hang
at
on,
both
hang on,
two...
Hang on. Are you comparing Greg Inglis to Luther Burrell?
Yeah. Well, exactly. And I think, you know, because ultimately, I think Burrell was going to be playing in the centres, maybe. I mean, that's up for debate. But, you know, you could, if you put Inglis there or Burrell there, who would you pick? Is it, you know, a debate?
Toby
or is
King.
It just...
No, it's well, them two are fighting for the space after Toby, aren't they?
But, you know, I don't think he's got anything to offer now. I think he'd probably better off going back to Union. I mean, he would have benefited from having a season or two with us, getting fit and everything, and maybe he can find an impressing Union again.
I suppose it's not beyond the realms of possibility to see him loaned out to Sale Sharks. I suppose that's not beyond the realms of possibility. I don't know if he can do a cross-code
paperwork,
loan.
Paperwork, Sam. Imagine the paperwork yeah, there. Paperwork. Cross-code.
Messy paperwork. Yeah. That'd be good. The way I see this, right, is that, and we've had coaches on the podcast, we've had, you know, we had John Clark on the podcast, and they've all kind of said the same thing in that in rugby union, he was being used three or four times in a game. That was it. That was all he did. You know, the ball was in the stands for 40 minutes. You saw him at London, Sam, and he was enormous. He was a big lad and he was built to go forward three or four times in a game of union, either break the line or get his team on the front foot. That was what he was there. Yes. Get over the advantage line. That was his game. He wasn't particularly that quick. He's not skillful, but that was his job, and he did it very well. When he comes to Warrington, he's puffing and panting because his cardiovascular is not up to scratch. We saw him playing the game at Salford, where Salford break down the left edge, and he's nowhere to be seen. He's like a cart horse in the back, trying to get back, and he's playing out in the centre. So all of a sudden, what they've done is they've stripped him bare of all this fat. They've turned him into this lean machine. What's he going to do?
Well,
he's not got the speed anymore.
No, but that's my point. I think you've summed up the first bit well. In a peculiar way, at Northampton, he's their Ben Murdoch Masella, isn't he? They're looking for four big, robustious bursts, knocking people out of the way.
Yeah.
They've stripped him lean, which is why I say it's only fair to compare him this year and what we've seen, three or four performances this year. So we can't compare. Let's see, it's going to be an expensive experiment, isn't it? And if he was 25, you'd think it's worthwhile. But I can't remember his age now, but 32, is he?
But Statman's at it, yeah. His main attribute was that size.
Size, yeah.
So he hasn't got any pace. I've seen him on Instagram trying to hit a golf ball. He can't hit a golf ball for love nor money. So he's not skillful. What I mean, the only thing is that he's not on the salary cap, and it's just an experiment that's continuing. But wouldn't you rather see that money be invested in a couple of good juniors?
Yeah, possibly. But again, I want this to be a constructive conversation, not just a bagging of the player, because it's not his fault, is it?
No, it's not his fault at all. Not his fault at all. No doubt about it.
He's taken the opportunity. It's whether he can make the most of that opportunity.
I just don't know what Warrington are trying to turn him into.
He was used in the second row this season, wasn't he, when he was coming off the bench?
Yes. Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
But you look at Twigamala, who played for Wigan, who in his first training session, he pairs up with the person that's the same size of him. So it was Andy Platt, and he wasn't fit. You know, straight away he realised he wasn't to that conditioning of Andy Platt. But then he goes away and he loses a bit of body fat, and he's still enormous and he's still quick, and they got a belting player from Rugby Union. I don't see Burrell being that player when he's been stripped of all this weight and he's now looking like the rest of them and he's never played rugby league. I don't get the point of it. I don't see where it's coming from.
I'm watching a video on barrel making. Sorry, carry on. Jesus,
right. Last time out, Dennis introduced us to the acronym that slipped past Sam's watchful eye, Media Umpiring for Future Sports.
So can having I stop you there?
Oh, here we go.
It didn't pass me by.
I was there.
So having performed a public relations makeover on the Super League referees, has our very own in-house Dominic Cummings any spin left for this week? Well, quite frankly, I'd rather drive 250 miles than listen to this. But unfortunately, it's time for
Tackle Bags.
You're joking. Not another one? Oh, for God's sake, I can't stand this.
Yes, here we are again. Don't disappear. You'll miss it, and then you'll be asking questions. Fuck's sake. Right, last week I talked about the need to change the profile of referees. Now, with my new initiative, Media Umpiring for Future Sports, is a revamp of referees and their profile, promoting their showcasing their personalities. I presented research data that proved through the use of social media, leaders can drastically increase their engagement and execute strategy more effectively. So applying this research to referees, we can improve their command of the game and gain respect of everyone in rugby league circles. I'm reading this wrong today. And improve the overall refereeing in the game. Right, you've distracted me today.
He's not listening.
I know.
Yeah, but I tell you what, you did mention Dominic Cummings. You do need your eyesight testing, don't you?
I do. I've got something wrong with one eye. Anyway, we had a good response this week. 78% agreed it was a good idea. We had Wendy Flangepress. See, she said, super idea, you could have a cameo on Fake or Fortune. There you go, Rob. Where alternatively, brilliant replicas of art are reviewed. You could call it Kendall's Mint Fake. There you go. Mm. It's not bad, thank you. No. Tina Twixilix, she said, no. And let's be honest, I have no interest in seeing Stuart Cummings. Don't know what she means by that. Anyway, other 4%, this is Blurry Knuckles. I think he's referring to the sock puppet idea on YouTube. I too like to put faces and dress up at my sock as beautiful women. Simply slip the sock on, look down and take her by the hand and fill her with joy. So I don't know what sort of...
I do apologise, Daniel. I do apologise.
He's no idea what's going on now, have you, Daniel?
Yeah. I'm enjoying it. Keep going.
Okay. See, got a fan.
You're the only one.
Now, this week, following on from my brilliant ideas, the successes of Tackle Bags, which now include player trading cards, crowd technology, and everything else that I've come up with. All coming to fruition now, you can see it. It occurred to me we also need to look at the referee's role in this modern technological world and the new rules, and in particular, the new six again rules in the NRL, which I think, you know, good chance we'll be adopting over here as well.
Six again rules or rule?
Rule.
Okay. Because you said rules, that was all. I just wanted to make sure. Yeah, you did, yeah. Sam, didn't he said rules, didn't he? He said rules. He did.
You'll like this. Yeah, I know you'll all be over this when I'm finished. Anyway, we've got one slight problem. For the players and the audience to track the cattle count. To track this tackle count at the set restart, it's pretty impossible to actually follow, especially on TV. I think we've all found that sometimes you miss the fact that, you know, the set restarts happen.
I followed it really clearly.
No, I don't think you did. Imagine being a fan in the stand and you're having a chat, this, that and the other, and next minute you're looking around and it's like, bloody hell, how many tackles have they had here? What's going on? So we need somehow to sort of identify what tackle count we're on. So, well, fear not. I have here on Tackle Bags, I've been working on some new clothing technology using the latest fabric technology available. Now, some of us remember the colour-changing T-shirts of the late 80s, effectively showing where you were sweating. As the body heated up, the fabric changed colour. Well, technology's moved on now in the 21st century. We've now got to a much more sophisticated items that can be incorporated into the clothes. My new invention, which is called Judging in Sensory Mechanics, here an LED fabric is woven into the textile of material of the referee's shirts. Now, connected to a sensor that is listening to the commands of the referee, and in particular the phrases of the tackle count, immediately turns that message into a visual signal on the referee's shirt. So, with the new six again rule, when obviously the referee makes that call of a set restart, the whole T-shirt flashes bright red, white, blue, yellow, green, all the colours of the rainbow. And immediately everybody in the stadium can see that we've gone back to a set restart. And the tackle now count then starts again and visually says tackle count number one, for instance, on the front and the back of the referee's shirt. So therefore enhancing the fans and viewers' experience when it comes to watching the game with the new rules.
Daniel looks like he's about to cry.
I look like that all the time, don't worry. That's what Living Leeds does to you.
So, come on. Come on, Daniel.
Me? Okay. Well, yes, I like you. The idea of changing colours, I think.
Isn't he nice, Daniel? Isn't he nice?
Incredible imagination.
Yeah. I think this is the first thing you've ever done that might actually work and be taken on.
What do you mean, first thing? I've already listed all my efforts and tackle bags. Come on, Rob, give us your question.
What temperature do you wash the shirts on? Because it sounds like if you put it on any more than a 30, it's going to absolutely be a clusterfuck in that washing machine.
I'm thinking that, you know, a range of like Febreze products that you don't actually have to put them in the wash, just in case.
Could you put it in with like the colours as well?
Yes, it doesn't matter because it will just flash each of those colours where it feels mutually.
So it's not dry cleaning there. You wouldn't need to just dry clean it.
No, you can't dry clean it. It is affected after once it gets over 60 degrees.
Huh, very interesting.
Do you like it?
It's very good, Dennis. Very good. Put me down for three.
So, put us down for all the social media outlets. Also, Daniel's willing to be taking some of the correspondence for us. So make sure that you look at his blog, and he's also in favour of it. I'll put you down for a percentage, Daniel, on that one.
Oh, lovely. Thank you.
Remain indoors. Remain indoors.
You are now listening to the Rugby League Emergency Broadcast System.
Welcome back to the Warrington Wolves Isolation News, reporting every week on what the players of the Warrington Wolves have been getting up to. Our supercomputer, Lottie, will analyse the web and social media activities each week and randomly select a player and isolation activity for the podcast to analyse. So, without further ado, Lottie, let's plug those dots from those wire clogs. And the results are in. It's Matty Ashton, and its climb to recovery.
Instagram delivered quite a catch last week when we hooked up and reeled in the formidable angler, Pat Moran. Dennis, this time out, if it was a fish, it'd be pretty hard to catch because it's Matty Ashton. What have you got for us?
Well, Matty's been riding high this week, elevating his status. He's climbed the Ingleborough Mountain, 2,373 feet. Each step put in a certain amount of pressure on that hamstring. He looked back to fitness. So I think, Rob, fancy a coffee and we'll hand it over to these two.
Well, I think we've only seen Ashton play 3 games, I think. And in those 3 games, he was impressive, no doubt. And I know he played all 3 at fullback. My concern is I wouldn't be wanting to move Ratchford, who has been one of our most influential players for, I think, 6 or 7 years now, out of position to accommodate someone we've only seen 3 times. Now, this is not against Ashton. I'm sure he's got a great future. I think he's a real talent. I think he's a great find from the club. I just don't think that we should be moving Ratchford, who is so important to the way we play. Everything we do, I think, goes through Ratchford offensively and defensively. So I'd be against moving someone who is so intelligent with his reading of the game out of fullback into centre, which I think is the argument that a lot of people go for. I also think that we saw Ratchford play against Toronto this year at centre and he hardly touched the ball. And I think Ratchford is probably the best ball handler at the club, I would say. So I think we want to see him having the ball as much as possible and influencing things. And my concern is just that he won't see enough of the game at centre.
Well, it's interesting you should say that, Daniel, because we had a text this week from Sam Sankey, who gave his best 7, and he's got Ratchford at the right centre position. So over to you, Sam.
Yeah, well, first of all, I would agree that Ratchford playing at fullback gives us a particular way of playing, and he chimes into the line, and his ball handling is better than we've seen it. Better than we've seen from Matty Ashton so far, given that we've only seen Ashton for 3 games. But I'm going to say pace is something that rarely comes along in what we've seen from Matty Ashton. And I've got to find a place for him in the team. He's either got to displace one of the wingers, or if you go back to what you were saying 15 or 20 minutes ago, where's our second centre? Well, our second centre is Stephen Ratchford with the pace at fullback that Ashton gives us.
Daniel?
Do you think we've been set up here, mate?
So, no, I see your point. I'm just hesitant. I think last year when Ratchford was injured, we missed so much, and it was only then that I think a lot of people realised how important he is to the structure of our team and how we set ourselves up. So I'm just really nervous about the idea of not having Ratchford at fullback.
Do you not think it's a bit more important that Blake pulls his finger out and creates more for other people rather than just playing with his own ball?
Well, definitely. I mean, I've been critical of Austin this season. I certainly think we need more from him.
Good man.
But it's because we need more from Austin that Ratchford is having to do so much, you know. So, I don't know. I think, you know, what about trying Ashton at centre?
You gain on the swings, you lose on the roundabouts with this, though, don't you? You lose a bit of ball-playing ability.
Answer the question, Sankey.
Yeah, stop hanging around the roundabouts.
No. I'm sticking with Stephen Ratchford, centre. Stephen Ratchford, right centre. Greg Inglis, left centre. There'd be strike ability all over the pitch there.
Come on, Daniel. Tell him he's a dickhead. Just give it back to him now.
I look at that Toronto game where we set up in this way you're suggesting with Ratchford in the centre and Ashton at fullback, and we were dreadful in attack. And we were useless at the back, and we conceded 24 points to Toronto without Ratchford at fullback.
Yes, thank you. 24 points.
Yeah. To one of the worst sides I've seen in Super League. So, you know, ultimately that's only one match, and I can't base my whole argument on that one match. But if that one match is anything to go by, I don't want Ratchford moving out of a fullback. I do want Ashton in the team because I think he's such a talent, and his pace is frightening.
So which wing are you going to drop then?
So I think you can either play him on a wing or could you not give Ashton a go at centre? You know, you mentioned earlier Goodwin didn't have the pace to play at centre necessarily. Ashton certainly does have that pace.
I think the thing about this is, Daniel, is that, you know, you've got a great young mind here, you know, and you're taking on a guy whose brain cells are disappearing pretty quickly and he's confused.
With every glass of wine I drink, I kill a few more.
I have to say, Daniel, your stats do roll off the tongue a bit better. You know, you don't even have to sort of like look at a piece of paper or anything like that. You just reel them off.
Listen, I've been looking for a way out. I've been looking for a way out since episode 2. Thank you.
So, Rob, are you putting, are you nailing to your colours to the mast?
No, Daniel, every time. Daniel, every time, no doubt. No, I meant, I don't know
Matty
what he said,
Ashton,
but...
Or Matty Ashton or Ratchford, what do you think?
I think we need a bit of pressure on those two wingers. I think they've had it too easy for too long in Lynham and Charnley. They're both good wingers, but I would like to see a bit of pressure being put on them.
But, who back?
It would have to be Ashton, wouldn't it?
But you were totally against this when I mentioned it about right at the beginning of the season.
My brain.
He was.
My brain's starting to hurt. It's hurting, Dennis. It's hurting.
Go on, Daniel, jump in.
There's Mamo kicking about as well in terms of the wingers. You know, he's meant to be putting pressure on the wingers, and he's not started all season on the wing.
Has he received the memo to say that he could start on the wing? That's what I wonder. No one's mentioned Luther Burrell in this.
I wonder why.
Yeah. Okay, it's time for the Twitter vote. The question was, following a shortened version of Super League under a lockdown scenario, if Warrington were to win the grand final in an empty stadium, would you consider the victory to have been our year? We had four options. Shit. Yes, no, even better, and what's the point? Got 150 votes. A, yes, 62%. B, no, 20%. C, even better, just the 4%. And D, what's the point? 14%. Daniel, where would you vote in this one, mate? Where would you go?
Yes, absolutely, because it doesn't, you know, the fans don't mean that the trophy is more or less valid. So, you know, if Warrington or any other team wins Super League behind closed doors in an empty Old Trafford or an empty stadium, you know, they've still won it. They've still won the trophy. They've still won the competition, even if the season has been shortened, because ultimately they've won it on whatever the regulations were. You know, thinking about the football, you know, being a Liverpool fan, I have obviously this situation as well, that Liverpool are likely to win the Premier League behind closed doors. But that doesn't mean the Premier League wasn't won. You know, the achievement is still the same. It just means that for that one season, there weren't fans in the ground. But I don't think it makes the win any less valid. And, you know, if we did win...
You can't compare the two, though, Daniel, can you? Because Liverpool have it in the bag. They're only a couple of games away. We've only played a couple of games.
But it's still the same thing in the sense of, well, the fans being there, what difference does that make to the result?
Take that.
Well, actually, that'll be a Tackle Bags feature coming up soon, and I'll give you the science behind that. But
if we win Super League this year, if we win the grand final, win Super League this year, it'll still be a sweep whether there's people in the ground or not, and I firmly believe that.
Well, you know, if a tree falls over in a forest and there's no one there, does it make a noise?
No, because it only makes a noise when the sound waves reverberate against your eardrum. There you go.
I think that this season will be looked upon as the season where, well, yeah, but there was that thing going on and it wasn't quite right.
No,
and it
will be
feel
looked
the
on
same.
As the season where Stephen Ratchford became a Great Britain centre.
Do you? Stephen Hogg, he's had his say on this. He said it's always our year. Grates me every time I hear it. And I refuse to join in. Paul Sutton King, we should cancel the season and regroup for next year. Give me a discount on my 2021 season tickets and consign this year to the history books. Dave Munro, I think, though, summed it up perfectly. He said, if we played Wigan in the said grand final and they did what they do in the NRL with cardboard fans, do you think the cardboard Wigan fans would still do the Wigan walk? So they'd have to be some kind of like fortified cardboard, wouldn't they, or something? Because Wigan is a spineless. It's just going to get floppy if they're all made out of card. It'd be very good, would it?
It's time for a new section to the show. Well, I say new. We've just rebadged it. Yes. Wait for it. It's time for... It's coming. Yes, here it is. Lockdown. I said lockdown. Yes, lockdown. Lockdown letters. Emails. Texts. Tweets. Twitches. MySpace. Bebo. Friends reunite. Those wankers that write on walls in toilets. You know the ones. Put little dicks on the walls with a sort of hole. It turns out to be a glory hole if you stick your cock through it. Not that I'd know that. Anyway, it's time for Lockdown Letters.
The first one's coming from some bloke called Jim Vaseline. He's written in a few times before. he's back again. Jim says this, he says in his letter this week, he says, this week I'm complaining at the standard of last week's podcast, and in particular, drawing attention to your guest from Warrington Hospital, Dave Bitch. I think he means Birch, but he's written Bitch. He added no insight whatsoever, and his answers to all of Rob London's hard-hitting questions were met with complacency and contempt. From where I'm standing, Dave is clearly in the pocket of the club, too frightened to speak his mind. And ironically, the use of sooty and sweep during the tackle bag section leads me to believe he's Carl Fitzpatrick's glove puppet. Or to pub it another way, Carl's Birch. I think he means Bitch. I think he's got that way around.
Yeah. Do you think you started something off now because of, like, you know, you're mixing these people up, that they're having a go at each other now? Is that what's going on? Poor old Jim Vaseline there.
Oh, dear. Never mind. Second one's come in from John Lewisven. I'm originally from Halton, but I live in Somerset now. And from listening to the podcast, it's clear Dennis doesn't live that far away from me. During the podcast, you referred to the well-known barbecue sales sausage analogy and the wire props. Dennis mentioned chorizo sausage. I've noted also he's keen to express his opinions towards the catering at the Halliwell Jones, which leads one to believe he's a gastronome. No one from Halton says one and gastronome in the set. Hang on. There's a fold on the paper. It's Walton, Sam. You don't need to worry. It's not. With Dennis's focusing on innovative ideas on the podcast, would he be willing to invest in my bespoke artisan vegan / organic falafel startup company?
That sounds nice.
I'll put you in touch with him. And the last one's come in from Terry Inflammation. He says, has the podcast considered starting a section based on that well-known program, Through the Keyhole? Good idea. God. I think it would be really interesting. You could run it as a quiz with a look through the player's keyhole in one episode and give the answers to which player's dwelling it is the following week. No one's ever quite sure what goes on behind closed doors. It's true, Sam, isn't it? Feel at your place. I once knocked on Kevin Ellis's door one morning whilst canvassing for the Green Party, and he invited me in. As welcoming as Kev was, in my opinion, his house was a dump. And as I went to leave, who should emerge from the downstairs toilet but Roland Phillips with a copy of the Warrington Mercury under his arm? I may have been trying to get the local Green candidate elected, but Roland certainly hadn't been eating any greens. I have no idea what Welshmen eat for breakfast, but that fucking stunk. And I don't think Kevin would have seen any action of anyone's keyhole had he taken them back to his place. P.S. I still admire his spin pass. So that's nice, isn't it? Okay, that's not quite all for this week, because we have a very, very, very special episode on Wednesday. Look out for that. I think it's by far our best episode ever, and it will be downloadable from Wednesday morning. Please tell everyone about it. Make sure you listen to it and pass the message on. So keep your lockdown letters coming in, and if you're writing to Sam, please, please, please use Basildon Bond writing paper with the watermark, because Sam will accept nothing less. You can email to whatbevan@gmail.com, tweet to @whatbevan, or if your idea of experience culture when travelling the globe is to find a bar for breakfast that shows Sky Sports, drink lager and dine on a full English, there's always Facebook. So from a man with his entire life ahead of him, and no doubt one day will go on a package deal to Mars, it's an orbital goodbye from the star of the podcast, Daniel.
Thank you very much. Thank you, Emily.
not forgetting a man that was around to see the invention of fire and the wheel, and clearly remembers a time at school when, due to Kevin Keegan, the boys during PE would wear blue and dark blue ranked Xerox Southampton away tops. Yes, it's Friday, it's 5 to 5 from Sam.
Crackerjack.
And they talk about one day scientists having the ability to extract the DNA of a dinosaur from a piece of amber, thus turning the primeval creature back to life. Although this old lady probably remembers him from the first time around. It's a Jurassic So Long from Dennis.
Good seeing you, Dicky.
I'm Rob London. I'm off to play with my Stretch Armstrong and Tin Can Alley. I wonder which one I could trade in on Multicoloured Swap Shop. You've been listening to What Would Brian Bevan Say?
You're not going to replace me with Daniel, are you?
I tell you what, you have Dave Birch last week and Daniel this week. I think it's about time I replaced you two. Right pair of cuts.